I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Exactly right. Don't take my sunshine away, baby. This is White Area and Resistance Radio Network here. White Area and Resistance Radio Network. The date is October the 21st, 2015. Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day, and we're moving quickly towards the great pagan holiday of Halloween. Are you ready? I don't even have to put a mask on, man. And as usual, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show. If you haven't got them in for October, hey, it's time. You're overdue. And then go on up to our big website where you can get a real college education on race, economics, a whole lot of things. That's true. And let's see, what else? Well, it's a nice day today, a little cool, but not bad. Not bad at all. Today's the day I have my monthly 1956 graduating class luncheon. So we had a good time with the boys and girls. Met a couple of guys I hadn't seen in 50 years. How about that? They're living out of state. Came back just to have a little meal with us. How about that? Well, let's get with the show here and see if we can dig up some crap. I think I told you that 60,000 non-Turkish people are living now in Turkey, migrants and like that, but they're not getting citizenship, and none of the babies are anchor babies either. The Turkish government's smart about that. They're not going to make these people citizens, and they're not going to give their babies Turkish citizenship. They're a little smarter than we are. Dateline, St. Louis. Police are stepping up patrols and trying to develop a profile of whomever has set 6 fires outside churches in a predominantly black neighborhood since October 8, Police Chief Sam Dotson said. Well, I didn't know there was any neighborhoods in St. Louis that weren't full of blacks. And they said they set the fires outside the church. Isn't that just right, a Negroid? He wants to burn something down. He needs to put it inside. The American Civil Liberties Union of Missouri and the Anti-Defecation League suggested a racial motive may be at play, which feathers their nest. The more they can stir up the pot, the more money they take in donations. In a prepared statement, the ACLU of Missouri's executive director, Jeffrey Mittman, called the fires domestic terrorism. And I'll bet you $50 it's Negroes that set the fires. It is a sad truth that throughout our nation's history, African Americans often have met with astounding violence when they demand equality. Well, they're not going to get equality, they never had equality, and we ain't never going to give them equality because it's impossible for the Negro race to be equal. Equal to the white race, the Aryan race, or the Asians. It just ain't never going to happen. Those who commit this violence seek to instill fear. Now, they're automatically assuming that it's racially motivated. Automatically. Now, of course, it feathers their nests and they can get a lot of donations, like the Southern Millionaires Law Center. They push this stuff like mad when they don't even know who did it. Well, this is why arson against predominantly black churches has been a frequent tool of white supremacy, unquote. But Dotson said investigators have yet to confirm that race was a motive. Whoa. If race or religion proves to be the reason, he said, police will seek to have the incidents prosecuted as hate crimes, which is ridiculous. I never knew of a love crime. They're hate crime. If they're crimes, they're crimes. The whole stupid hate crime thing is merely to shove a lot of this stuff off on white people. The chief noted that the variety of denominations and types of structures targeted. They include a Catholic, a Lutheran, a Baptist, and a non-denominational congregation. 4 on the north side of St. Louis, and 2 in Jennings. They vary from the relatively grandiose historic brick structures of St. Augustine Catholic Church and the Ebenezer Lutheran Church at the modest storefront used by the New Testament Church of Christ. Wow. That's amazing. But we sure are blessed. None of the churches of what's happening now, none of them got firebombed. How about that? We must be living a righteous life. Churches are within about 5 miles of each other and sustained varying levels of damage from the fire set in their front doors and from October 8th to 18th. Mainly the damage was contained, police presume, but are not certain that the blazes are the work of the same person or people. Well, you better check on the insurance policies on those churches. If they just recently raised the insurance policy payoff, well, you got a good idea what's going on there. On Tuesday, October 20th, the St. Louis Police Officers Association said it would match the $2,000 reward being offered by the St. Louis Regional Crime Stoppers and the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives for information leading to an arrest. Now, if that was a white church, do you think they would do that? Oh, you're kidding. No. If that was a white church or maybe even an Asian church, they wouldn't do all that. They wouldn't offer any kind of money. Boy. All animals are equal, but some are more equal than others, right? Now, the ATF has joined the effort. awful, terrible, and faulty, with the St. Louis Regional Bomb and Arson Unit, which includes city and St. Louis County detectives, and the St. Louis City Fire Department Investigative Unit. The Missouri Attorney General Chris Costner and Governor Jay Nixon have offered state assistance. Wow. Wow. If you know any white guys out there that are dumb enough to waste their time, their gasoline, or whatever they use to burn down one of these non-white churches, tell them, you gotta be crazy, man. Well, we got some good news here. Dallas teen Ahmad Mohammed and family will move to Qatar. Many U.S. schools have made offers to Ahmad since he was arrested last month after a teacher mistook his homemade clock for a bomb. Well, I saw a picture of it. Sure as hell looked like a bomb to me. At least I would have called the cops just like the teacher did. But his family announced Tuesday that they've accepted a foundation's offer to pay for the 14-year-old's high school and college in Doha, Qatar. So we got rid of one bunch. He'll probably come back, though. Oh, boy. This guy says, I've been listening to the potpourri of politicians pretending to be prepared for the presidency for any traces of foreign policy clarity. Well, there isn't any. Or religious or ethical values underlying their foreign policy proposals. Well, with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people being murdered in the Middle East, obviously there's no religious or ethical values involved. There's not much there so far. One big picture way to think about this issue is to draw a distinction between those who want America. Why don't they say want the United States? Why is it always America? You know, it's not South America or Central America. This is USA. Not for long, though, I don't think. Anyhow, to act in foreign affairs exclusively to advance our national interests. And those who desire that the United States advance a certain set of values in the international arena, whether or not this advances our self-interest. No, that's not self-interest. It's corporate interest. There's only the so-called American interest is nothing but corporate interest. Not your interest, dummy. Just pay your tax and shut up. Taking nationalist account of our foreign policy goals as security, strong alliances, diplomatic success, and economic self-interest. Boy, if that wasn't a mouthful of bullshit. There are no ideals at work in such a vision. Just national self-interest. No, national corporate interest. We want to secure well-connected, powerful, and wealthy. Wait a minute. We want world events to work out in a way that benefits our interests. Our interests? Are you kidding? Since when are they interested in our interests? Let's call this a great American vision. Presidents use national power to keep and make America great. Boy, this guy's so full of shit. His name is he's a Reverend Dr. David Gushee. He's a distinguished, he describes himself as a distinguished university professor of Christian ethics. Wait a minute. Those two words don't fit together, Christian ethics. And director of the Center for Theological and Public Life at Mercer University. He's the author of 20 books in his field, including Righteous Gentiles of the Holocaust, Kingdom Ethics, The Sacredness of Human Life. Yeah, you're really worried about that way, the bombing his shit out all over the Middle East. And Changing Our Mind, he has been puzzled over Christians, conflict, and change for a very long time. Wow. Policies that go with such goals might include maintaining the strongest military in the world. In other words, military dictatorships. 700 military bases all over the world. Armed to the teeth. Supporting Israel with hundreds of atomic warheads. Aggressive use of drones. Yeah, bomb the shit out of those people. They better not have a wedding on my march. or we got a bomb for them men. About the time they pour the punch, we're going to hit them. Special forces and other means to go after terrorist enemies. Yeah, special forces, they haven't been doing very good so far. Our terrorist enemies are here in this country. They're in Washington. And I haven't seen any special forces going after them. Our greatest enemies are right here in Washington and Wall Street. And even in the media. Special forces, get your ass back here. We need you here. A robust alliance system with substantial U.S. troops presence is especially in dangerous areas. Yeah, we need more troops. We want more troops over here. Aggressive diplomacy that brooks few compromises, whatever that means. In other words, you won't make a deal with anybody. Just regime change. Get rid of them. Few compromises and nationalist economy, economic and trade policies like TPP, designed to screw everybody but the filthy rich. Now contrast that with moralistic view that says the goal of U.S. foreign policy should be to advance American humane values. Was that sort of like the Civil War, American humane values? Then let's say those values are defined as freedom. Freedom from what? Freedom to do what? Freedom not to do what? Democracy, the worst form of government ever figured out. Our founding fathers knew about that. And definitely the military knew about that. Human rights. What the hell's a human right? Human right. Who's human, who's not? Rights? There's no such thing. Only privileges granted to you by the super rich. Now, if you don't go by that, they're going to get you. Global peacemaking. Where is there any peacemaking in the whole earth? And advancing the global common good. What the hell is the global common good? You need to define this shit for me. I'm just a country boy. This is America, the selfless, or at least less selfish. America as emissary for good in the world. America, the nation using its great power to make life better for other people. What the hell's this guy on? He's got to be more powerful than pot. I think he's on peyote if he believes all this shit. Let's call this a good America vision. Presidents use national power to advance values. Yeah, they advanced values in Iraq. They advanced American values in several other countries. Yeah. Gaddafi found out about American values. He said, I want to have peace with the United States. I don't want to fight with the United States anymore. And within a year, he's dead. Policies reflecting this approach might include maintaining substantial budgets for foreign aid. Oh, yeah, we got to give them lots of money when our dollar's about ready to go down the tube. Yeah, foreign aid. I wouldn't give anybody any foreign aid. Or if it was, they'd do exactly what I want them to do and nothing else. No foreign aid to that fucking state of Israel, that's for sure. Now, I think we should cut off all foreign aid, because we need foreign aid here. Give us some money, please. Please, I need some money. Regular use of U.S. diplomacy and perhaps military force to advance freedom and democracy. You're not going to advance freedom and democracy by a bigger military force. It's an oxymoron. You can't have both. Humanitarian intervention in situations of human rights violations. Yeah, we showed the Middle East how to, we're going to be humanitarian and rebuild those countries, build schools and everything else like that. Not. There's a third option, isolationism. Oh, now we're getting down to where my point of view. Yeah, let's see here. There's a third option, isolationism, which would aim at limiting international engagement and focusing on issues within our borders. This sounds good. He finally got to my section of the movie. This would involve less military intervention. Oh, I say no military intervention unless it directly affects continental United States, and get rid of all those damn little islands that we supposedly own, which we robbed the people of. Give Hawaii back to the Hawaiian people. Give the Marshall Islands to the Marshall Islands people. Get rid of all these places around the world. Get rid of them. And the abandonment of any kind of missionary or ethical vision for fixing the world's worst problems using U.S. power and dollars. Well, and kick all the preachers out of these countries. You know, they're free to preach here for now. But all these people causing problems and working for the CIA and everything else, pretending to be Christians and everything, and there's nothing more crazy and a problem for people in the third world than to adopt Christianity. They got enough problem with the Muslim religion or the Jew religion. Isolationism rejects both of the models just outlined. Let's call this an America alone vision. No, it's an America mind your own business vision. Stay out of other people's business. And once in a while, if they're friendly and peaceful, try to help them out. But no troops, no armies, none of that crap. A very interesting thing about these three U.S. foreign policy options is that in a deeply polarized country, they do not track along left, right, or party lines. That's good. The Good America Vision has had vocal advocates on both parties, though perhaps more strongly on the Democratic side. Now you're taking sides, but you're probably correct. The Great American Vision has likewise gained support across party lines, though perhaps is more characteristic of Republicans. And America alone isolationism has been and can be found in both parties. Well, what's wrong with that? I like it. Tommy likes it. My observation, and I'm a preacher, I know because God talks to me every night at midnight, my observation is the religious zeal tends to push pious politicians toward the Good America option in some form or another. Well, there are no pious politicians. They can't even hide it. You can see it in Woodrow Wilson, a war criminal, got us into the First World War, got millions more people killed than would have been killed if we'd left the war run in Europe. Jimmy Carter, no matter how good you think he was, he was in up to his ears in crap too. George W. Bush, arch war criminal, period. No doubt. Adherents of a Christian faith that eschews selfishness, and elevates regard for others. They took that morality into foreign affairs, for better or for worse. This was not the approach of, say, Richard Nixon, nor would it be the policy of President Trump or President Webb. Well, you got your President Obama, and he has done a wonderful bang-up job. It would be illuminating if at least one presidential debate required candidates to clarify whether theirs would be a great America, a good America, or America alone foreign policy. It would also be important to know what values would determine the answer to that question. Well, I'll tell you what. The Christians want more armies. The Christians want more wars. The Christians want more entanglements with other countries and other peoples. They don't want to just take care of their own neighborhood, their own homes, their own schools and so forth, fix up their own country. No, they want to go to the deepest, darkest pest holes in the world and build churches so they can brainwash these young people into this Christ insanity crap. And so if you don't cure that, you're never going to cure anything. Sooner or later, it's got to go. Got to go. At least get to the place where if a preacher steps out and gives a sermon, make him stand on the front steps of the church, and then when he gets done, we'll all laugh at him. What a fuck. I just put a sign up in front of my house today. It says, faith without evidence is bullshit. And I saw a guy out there already this morning taking a picture of it. He's probably a preacher someplace. I got a picture of this professor here, Reverend David Gushy. He looks like a jerk. I'll bet he's driving a high-priced car, living in a high-priced neighborhood, and I'll bet his kids go to high-priced schools. Want to bet? I want all those white preachers like that to go down in the ghetto and live. Hey, go down there and help black people out. They need your help. Mr. Pastor. Well, I'll tell you, there's three comments to this silly argument, this thing that this preacher invented. I think we should not intervene in civil wars as we are doing in Syria. The sooner we get our military out of Islamic countries, the better, no matter what situation of human rights might be. We can never succeed in promoting human rights at the point of a gun. We should have learned a lesson from our intervention in Libya and Egypt. Well, there's a guy that's thinking. You know, there's plenty of people out here in sheepland that do think. There's a here's the next one called Atheist Max. There's a third option, isolationism. No, a very religious administration, George W. Bush, unleashed a volcano by needlessly blowing up Iraq. There were no weapons of mass destruction. Instead, the USA is doomed to managing something even worse. The hot religious lava spilling from that region in reaction to the Christian crusade of the Bush years. A pity there is no God to help us from such profound faith-based Christian zealotry, ignorance, and stupidity. You got it right on the head. The next one's from Larry. Isolationism has never done anything of value to our country except keep us unprepared for the next inevitable conflict. That's not true. The United States for the first 100 years was pretty isolated until they got into that crazy shit Manifest Destiny and taking over islands in the Pacific and all that kind of stuff. As lone superpower, it is not an option. We have power and the responsibility to wield it. You say you don't like Adolf Hitler, you don't like Stalin, you don't like Mussolini. Well, those are the exact words they would use. We got the power, we're going to use it. Syria was going to happen one way or another. There's no such thing as a stable dictatorship. Well, I don't know. There's been, down through history, there's been a lot of stable dictatorship that lasted for 20, 40 years or better. A lot better than most democracies. They all sow the seeds of their own destruction. Sometimes, yeah, sometimes if they get decadent and corrupt. Half of the problems faced over there is because we stood aside and did nothing. We should have been in there with every man in the United States. Every kid coming out of college and high school should have been shipped over there with a gun and kill everybody. Then we'd be in better shape. By doing so, we let Iran and Saudi Arabia arm proxy forces to extend their reach into Levant. ISIS, the only religious values which should be part of the national international policy, is religious freedom. What does that mean, religious freedom? You have all the freedom you need to be religious. You can pray in school. You can pray anywhere you want. You can even get a half dozen people together and pray together. But you can't run a goddamn government. Oh, I forgot. You are running the government. Secular government, secular concerns, protection of the right of all people to worship or believe nothing at all without being persecuted. Well, I'll tell you right now, the people who believe nothing at all are the most persecuted people. Just come out in your community and say you're an atheist. They don't know what to do with me because I'm a racist and an atheist. They don't know which is the worst. This guy has gone over the man. This guy has gone over the pale, man. We got to do something about him. We're going to make him take that sign down outside his house and never put it up again, man. Which reminds me, I have to take all the neighbors whose property must edge up to my property, and some of these people on the list I've never heard of, and get them to sign off on me having a stupid little sign. So I got to go in on November the 10th to the Planning Commission and go through that bullshit. I'll tell you, it's probably going to be one hell of a meeting. I think maybe I should have my attorney with me. Well, here's an interesting thing that's happened here. Canterbury, England. When Charles I read it, this book, in 1631, he blew into a furious rage and ordered all the Bibles withdrawn and burned. Amazingly, a handful of 1,000 Bibles that contained a misprint amending the seventh commandment, "Thou shalt commit adultery," instead of "Thou shalt not commit adultery," survived the royal rage. One of them goes up for auction in London Auction House on November 11th. The bids are expected to top 16,000 British pounds, or 24,727 bucks, for one of the few surviving copies of what's called the Sinner's Bible. And that's because what it says, "Thou shalt commit adultery." I want one of those, men, but my gal won't let me buy it. After those misprints come out in that book, the royal printers, Robert Barker and Martin Lucas, begged forgiveness from both the archbishop and the monarch. They didn't get any. The two were fined 300 British pounds for 463 bucks, the equivalent of roughly 40,000 British pounds or 61,817 bucks in today's currency. Wow, boy, one little mistake. Barker later went bankrupt, was thrown into prison, and died behind bars in 1645. Since then, the Sinner's Bible has been a collector's treasure. Wow. Well, over there in Africa, amid stiff opposition to modern birth control methods in a predominantly Islamic Nigger region of northern Nigeria, a Muslim medical doctor is working to dispel the myths that fuel the resistance to family planning. Us niggas want all the nigger babies we can get. Stay away. For 10 years, Dr. Farouk Mohammed Yega, 45, has been championing evidence-based arguments to try to dissuade clerics that Islam supports family planning methods, contrary to the views of the many clerics here. And the many clerics want them to have all the niggas they want. We're going to get that white guy one way or another. Quote, "We have been talking to the leaders, making them understand that there's a lot of Islam that supports contraception," unquote, says Jiga, who works with the Pathfinder International, an organization that promotes sexual and reproductive rights in the developing world by expanding access to contraception. That's rubbers. Promoting healthy pregnancies and working to stop the spread of HIV. Islamic scientists have for centuries addressed family planning methods, recording different types of contraception. The Hadith, or collection of sayings or traditions attributed to the Prophet Muhammad, there's that bastard again, shows he was likely aware of family planning methods. Support for birth control varies from one Muslim country to another. Experts say family planning grants an enormous health and economic benefits that has led some faith communities to take a lead in providing the services. Well, you don't have to go to Africa to find people that are opposed to family planning. Margaret Mead was the bad one. Margaret Sanger, she's a hero of the Aryan race who believed in eugenics and so forth. But the Christian churches, the fundamentalists, they don't believe that. They want to have as many babies as possible, no matter what color they are, because if they're babies and they got a soul, they're all going to heaven and see Jesus. It's amazing. 2,000 years after the myth got started, they're still babbling on about this kind of stuff. It's amazing. We're still stuck really in the dark ages. We may be in the modern age, but we're still living a lot in the dark ages. Somebody started a rumor, Papa over there in Rome's got a brain tumor, but they're denying it. Yeah, Papa don't have no brain tumor because Jesus wouldn't allow that, man. Come on. They're still fighting over this Benghazi thing. New state documents show quick White House effort to link Benghazi to internet video. Well, let's put it this way. Hillary is not my favorite person. In fact, she may be one of my least favorite persons. But where did it all start? It all started with the Bush crime family. It all evolved from there. So the Bush crime family had not spread its hatred and murder across the Middle East, there would not have been a Benghazi. And if we'd have left, so before everybody goes crazy jumping all over Hillary Clinton, they should go back and say, what started the whole thing? What's the train of evidence? The train of evidence started with the invasion of Iraq and all the regime change stuff. That's where it started. And so she may have been inept and made mistakes, but and I'm certainly not a proponent of Hillary, but it's bullshit for them, all those Republican war criminal assholes, to sit there on a committee and jump all over her when if it hadn't been for the Bush crime family and all their bullshit and the Cheneys, none of this would be happening. Well, I was looking at the records revealing Obama's February to March 2015 golf vacations and fundraisers cost the taxpayers $4,436,245 in travel expenses alone. Well, what do you expect? We got the best leadership money can buy. What do you think they want to be, the president and the congressmen and senators? He goes in as a simple street agitator with short pants and dirty socks and comes out living like a king. What more could a nigger want? I mean, can you blame him? He said, we want some of that shit too, Whitey. Yeah, you've been screwing people for decades. You've made all you senators and congressmen go out millionaires. It's about time for a nigger boy to get it. You can always tell on these websites whether they're coming from the Republican point of view or the Democrat. And most of the Republican point of view is so skewed and so, you know, you can read it, just like Fox TV. It's funny, really, because, you know, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And according to Max Kaiser, it's going to get pretty bad pretty quick up on Russia Today. He has a show on, well, I think I'm going to play a little bit up for you today. Yeah, I'm going to play some of it for you today. Oh, yeah, Hillary's going to testify before the House Benghazi Committee tomorrow, October 22nd, at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That's going to be interesting, because I don't think she's going to take it sitting down. I think she's going to come back fighting. Yeah. You got to give her that. If I was her, I'd say, well, it all started with your goddamn Bush crime family. That's where it all started. Then you throw it in my lap, and then you want to go after me? Well, you sons of bitches.
As a report, I'm Max Kaiser. Time now to turn to Swiss banker Egon von Greyerz of Matterhorn Asset Management and GoldSwitzerland.com. Egon, welcome back to the Kaiser Report.
Great to be here again, Max. Thank you.
Well, it's great to be here and visiting us from the mountains of Switzerland. Yeah. All right. So, Egon, let's have your input on this. This is a chart we were discussing in the first half of the show. This shows credit expansion and GDP flat, not going anywhere. What's going on? Can you comment on this?
Yes, this is called the law of diminishing returns, or in simple layman's terms, pushing on a string. You cannot, like Krugman thinks, and like most people in the city here behind us in London, you cannot create wealth by printing endless pieces of paper that have no value. And this is what governments are doing worldwide. And obviously, you reach a point when GDP is not going up anymore because that money is worthless that is being printed to drive it up. Now, if you also measure GDP with proper inflation rather than the published inflation, GDP would be coming down rather than up, real GDP.
Well, there's a couple of points there. First of all, you're talking about you can't create prosperity by printing lots of money. But we live in an economy going back, you know, 100 years, 150 years, where credit creation is definitely part of an expanding economy. But what's happened is that it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this business cycle that used to be around, where you would have credit creation, then you'd have an oversupply of goods and services, and then prices would come down, and you'd have a credit contraction. And that's been seeming like those laws of economic reality have been overridden by this mantra that no matter what the climate is, just keep the credit spigots open. Doesn't matter what's going on, just keep the credit flowing. Is that a fair statement?
That is a fair statement, of course. And this started in 1913 when the Fed was created. Since then, we have seen endless money printing and credit creation, and that has, of course, gone exponential since 1971 when Nixon abolished the backing of the dollar with gold. And therefore, you just take, since the early 1990s, world debt has doubled. Since 2008, world debt is up by 70 trillion roughly, which is almost 50%. Almost 50%. We had a crisis. They tried to solve it by printing endless amounts of money and giving more credit. That crisis is bigger now, and debt is bigger than it was when the crisis started. And that's what this system creates. As you said before, if you abolished all the central banks, which you should do, and if actually demand and supply would govern markets, we would never have these massive bubbles. And today we have the biggest bubble ever in world history. Worldwide bubble.
Well, you mentioned that this has been going on, really, you go back almost 100 years, to the 1913 period, the creation of central bank in the U.S. So it's a behavior that's quite entrenched in the way people think. They've used this trick many times before to get out of economic difficulties by opening up that credit spigot.
Yeah.
So the question is, you know, from the other side of the argument, they'll just say, look, this has worked for us for 100 years. We've never not had success in just opening up this credit spigot and allowing it. But it just seems that these GDP numbers, I mean, finally, it's just not working anymore. But how do you get folks to accept the fact that maybe the prescription they've been using for so long is just not is no longer working?
They won't accept it. The world will not accept it because the world is used to now governments. The way I look at governments is that what they're doing with this money is buying votes. That's all they're doing. They're keeping the people happy and buying more votes. Austerity, we know, does not work in any single country. When they tried in Greece or in Spain or in Italy, you know, there'll be strikes, there'll be marches, protests, because people are now used to being taken care of by the state. And therefore, sadly, it cannot be stopped now. Money printing will continue. It will not solve anything. The debt will be bigger. And eventually, I am convinced we will have, I hate the world QE because I think it's just an artificial world that they tell the people that something fancy is really money printing as far as I'm concerned. And money printing will escalate in the next few months or year. All countries will print from the U.S. to Japan, to China, to Europe, and we will have even more inflation leading, I think, to hyperinflation eventually. So there will be, there's no other, there's nothing else governments can do. They don't know any other solution. There isn't a solution right now to this problem. And we will have a collapse of the system.
Right.
And,
so in other words, they're not willing to change their behavior, so we're walking right into a collapse. And that's the only way the behavior will be changed, because you'll have a fundamental global financial collapse. Now, I want to kind of talk about something here that, you know, what we've just described has been going on for a few years. We've talked about it on the show a couple of times. But since then, we've got something new in the mix, negative interest rates. So in Switzerland, actually, they've got this. They've tried it. They're doing it. It's negative. Explain just, first of all, what it is. Well, how do you experience it? What does this mean, NERP, negative interest rate policy, and how did this happen?
Well, they have it in Swiss. I have two passports. I was born in Sweden, and I'm Swiss also. And both those countries have negative interest rates.
Oh, so you're the common denominator.
I am.
Egon von Greitz, wherever he goes, rates go negative. I suppose in Britain will now experience negative interest rates.
It is ridiculous negative interest rates. You know, you are actually, you know, in the end, you can have a mortgage and they pay you to take the mortgage. I mean, this is what that tells you. Well, because governments have, there's too much money flowing into a country, and the consequence is that people are not going to get a return on their money. How can you invest if you can't get the return on the money? And Switzerland then, having negative interest rates, they don't want an inflow into the Swiss franc, of course, because they don't want a strong Swiss franc. They've had a strong Switzerland. We've had a strong Swiss franc for decades and decades, and it's been extremely beneficial to the country, you know, the most prosperous country in Europe. But the new type of the Swiss central bankers, they think they're hedge fund managers, and they think that they can manipulate the economy. So they have the biggest balance sheet in the world in relation to GDP. Switzerland has about 85% Swiss National Bank's balance sheet in relation to GDP. The U.S. has 25%.
What's the argument now against holding gold? Because it used to be that, well, gold has no return, and you pay storage fees.
Yeah.
But if you put it in the bank and they take 1% out every year, why? I mean, you brought along some gold. Thank you very much. This is an interesting gold trinket, little gold gold seeds. So if I plant this into the ground, it'll grow a gold tree?
No, but it will grow in value.
Fair enough. But what's the incentive? What's the incentive then for not putting cash into gold? Why would I put it in a bank if the bank's going to – why would anybody put money in a bank if they're just going to take confiscate of 1% or whatever through negative interest rates?
Yes. No, nobody would put money into the bank. You're right. And therefore, the world cannot function with negative interest rates because you get no return on your money. So the difference with – no, if you're asking me, of course, money – well, it has been destroyed in the last 100 years, paper money in every country, by 97% to 99% in purchasing power or against gold.
In purchasing power, but they haven't actually gone in and just stolen money through these negative interest. And the ABS is a bank, and the first in Switzerland to introduce negative rates on customers with small deposits. Thus far, only the big institutional clients have been hit. So now this is trickling down to the retail customers.
Retail. Big customers already have had it, and now it's getting to small customers. Absolutely. So there is no incentive whatsoever to hold money, especially not since, as I said, money will also be destroyed by credit creation and money printing.
What about people who are benefiting from the bubble in housing prices due to the cheap interest rates? You mentioned mortgage rates are going to be, they're paying you to take a housing price. Is that a refuge for savings? Is that a good place to be? What's going to happen there?
Sadly, it is. People don't understand what they're doing because they're paying. I mean, in Switzerland, Austria, you can get a 20-year mortgage for 1.25%, roughly. 20-year mortgage. It costs nothing. The people don't even look at the annual cost. But house prices are shooting up into the sky, and that's creating the biggest bubble in property in many European countries.
Right. So when you go to sell that house because you need cash, suddenly there's no bids.
There's no bids. And plus, a lot of people will have lost their jobs also if things go the way that I think they will. So you'll have no job. You can't pay your mortgage.
Housing is not really an investment class as such because it's not liquid. It's not a cash equivalent the way government believe it is.
Not at all. And you have bubbles anyway. I mean, actually, you take London. In London, if you pay a top price for a property, you can pay $200 million, $250 million for a property, and then you can buy a painting. This is because another asset of the rich. You can buy a painting, a Picasso, for example, or a Gauguin, for another $250 million. So for half a billion, you get an apartment with one painting in it. That's what's happened in the world today. The money printing has created enormous wealth for 0.1% or less of the people. The rest are just getting more debt. That will never be repaid, of course.
Now, in China, of course, the government has been selling their treasury, U.S. Treasury paper, and they've been buying a lot of gold. Russia's been buying gold.
And selling treasury paper also. Russia, yeah.
Tell us about that trend. How much is that going to expand, do you think?
I think it definitely, all of these governments know that the dollar is the next currency to come down, because you cannot be the reserve currency in the world when you're also the most indebted country in the world and when you actually haven't had a budget surplus since the early 1960s. And you haven't had a trade surplus since the 1970s. So, therefore, the dollar will very soon, in my view, in the next few months at least, start coming down and coming down dramatically.
Well, the thing that backed the dollar for so long, as many on this show have said, is the Pentagon.
Yeah.
But it seems we've hit peak Pentagon.
Yes, yes.
If you know what I mean.
Absolutely. No, I mean, this. What is happening now in Syria, I mean, that is extremely interesting geopolitically, of course.
That's not good for the dollar.
I mean, gold will reflect this money printing and what's going to happen to the dollar. This gold, this is 1 gram pieces. That's $40.
Thank you, Egon. Thank you so much.
That's too quick. Okay. Well,
what?
That will be $400 at least in today's money, but it might also be $4 million or $4 trillion in future money. But that's not real money, of course. But it will preserve your wealth. Your paper money will never preserve your wealth. That is for certain.
Well, let's keep the plastic. Anyway, we got to go. Thanks for being on the Kaiser Report.
Thank you, Max.
Well, how about some more commentary here? I forgot and didn't have my mic plugged in. How about that? If it was under the big top, it would be a hilarious clown show with pratfalls, wild posturing, tumbling, juggling, and a cacophony of comic chaos. But alas, it's under the Capitol Dome, so it's just the Republican Congressional Caucus, bumbling, stumbling, and crashing into each other in clownish acts of ideological zaniness, political incoherence, and pathetic ineptitude. The present bedlam on the Hill was prompted by Speaker John Boehner abruptly deciding to zippity-doo-dah out of office, having finally given up on corralling his caucus of clowns. Sadly, his withdrawal has only intensified the buffoonery, generating slapstick intramural contest over which group of far outright wingers will replace him. Boehner's contingent of anti-government, corporate-hugging extremists want one of their own, while assorted groupings of even fringier, farther-out packs of mad dog Tea Party Republicans want someone who'll howl at the moon and literally shut down the government. Wait a minute here. Okay, come on. I don't know what's going on here. Oh, here we go. For a moment, Representative Paul Ryan appeared to be the consensus pick, except for two problems. One, he doesn't really want the thankless task of clown herding. And two, even though he is an Ayn Rand worshiping cock, hugging laissez-faire fairyland ideologue dedicated to killing everything from Social Security to Obamacare, Ryan is just not a right-wingy enough for the howlers. He still considers whether to run for the job, but even if he does and wins, the spectacle will continue. Here's the irony of Ryan's predicament. He created his own mess. He was chief architect of the 2010 Republican scheme to take over Congress by recruiting and electing the mad dogs who are now biting him on the butt and turning the U.S. House of Representation into the House of Ridiculousness. As Representative Peter King put it, we look absolutely crazy. Yeah, that's pretty funny. Pretty funny. The Republican Party doesn't care bullshit about white people, except the white rich. So you got to get that through your head. And all you guys out there that are still hanging on to that possibility, forget it. It hasn't been that way for a long time. The Southern strategy was bullshit, just trying to wean you away from the Democrat Party, which was screwing you too. That's all this stuff. If you take any of this stuff serious, or any of these people, that they really want to straighten out things for you, no, they're just reshuffling the deck chairs on the Titanic, trying to figure out how they're going to get out of this thing when the balloon goes up. That's all it is. That's all it is. They're all up there in Washington trying to figure out how they can get $1 million, $10 million out of it before the whole thing comes crashing down, because you want to have an army all over the world and control the world and threaten Russia and regime change. And you know, and the sheep deserve it. The sheep deserve it because they're all out here. You can ask anybody down here where I live, are you all for U.S. government being powerful and control and having plenty of arms? Oh, hell yes. Oh, hell yes. We got to control the world. $1 trillion war budget? Oh, yeah, we got to have it. that's how stupid they are, and they're not going to get better. And like the guy said on the radio show that I just recorded, the people aren't going to change. They want everything free, and they want to get it. They don't want to make any changes, and so down we go. And Boehner, he just wants to go back to Ohio to his dad's bar and drink wine. He says, the hell with it. I've had enough of this bullshit.
The Christians are fond of their supposed heroic origins as a minority persecuted for their honest and simple faith in Jesus as their Lord and Savior. We've all seen those movies. The Christians, with their calm forbearance, wearing their whiter-than-white tunics and eyes uplifted towards heaven, suffering in silence the blows of sadistic Roman guards and the teeth of savage beasts. Thousands upon thousands dying for their faith, yet by their willing and noble sacrifice, winning a martyr's crown for themselves, and in the process tempering the harsh Roman culture by showing the truth and superiority of their religion over paganism. This fairy tale shows up in apologetics again and again, usually in that appalling soundbite, "Would they have died for a lie?" Now, before Hollywood brought its own particular magic to the fantasy, centuries of monkish scribes painted an even more fantastical picture in words, the lives of the saints. In these lurid tales of suffering and triumph, survival from beheadings and dismemberments were commonplace. The whole genre had all of the fantasy, but none of the grace of Harry Potter or Tom and Jerry. So where do serious Christians get their information from? How has it become an assumption, rarely if ever questioned, that the early Christians were persecuted, that they died for their faith? How is it one of those things that everyone knows but can't explain how they know? The first historian of the church, Eusebius, Bishop of Caesarea in the early 4th century, devoted great attention to the so-called martyrs of the faith. Yet even Eusebius could count only 9 bishops as martyrs and fewer than 2,000 Christians in total. Now, 2,000 people is not an inconsequential number, but across 300 years, that's fewer than 70 victims per year. Divide that number across almost 100 provinces, and you can see that persecution claimed fewer lives than strikes of lightning. Of course, persecution never occurred across 300 years, nor in all the provinces. The Western Empire was largely untouched by either persecution or Christianity. The first real persecution was during the reign of Emperor Decius in the mid-3rd century. This persecution had all the savagery of requiring Roman citizens to pour a libation for the health of the emperor. Some Christian fanatics refused. Yet Bishop Origen of Alexandria was able to record that in fact God protected the Christians and restrained the rage of their opponents. Those who died, said Origen, could be easily counted. Eusebius later added that God permitted the occasional persecution for the sake of discipline and correction of the brethren. The later years of the 3rd century were known as the Peace of Gallienus, when churchmen actually began to frequent the imperial palace. They owned property and began to gain political influence. In fact, the only true persecution was in the closing years of the reign of Emperor Diocletian and of his successors, Galerius and Maximinus. These emperors were frustrated by the negative influence that the Christians had on the army. Secret assemblies carried the death penalty, and church books were confiscated for burning. The persecution lasted less than a decade. In short, the persecution of the church as a sustained and bloody policy of the Roman state is a lie. The persecutions, so-called, were an invention of Holy Mother Church, fabricated for its own greater glory. It isn't true. It isn't history. It's more astounding rubbish.
It's that second time you hear your love song sung. Makes you think perhaps that love like you is wasted on. The second time you fall, like a friendly home, the second time you call. Second time around.
Well, that's it for now, boys and girls. I'll be back tomorrow on Thursday, and you have a good time. And five words, I have nothing to say. And if you're in a bar or any place where people are talking, don't talk but about the weather, man. Just the weather. And even watch it when you talk about the weather.